Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 146. My name is John. Throw your dog the invisible bone. This podcast will be a spoiler-filled review of Peacemaker Season 1, and a little bit for the Suicide Squad as well. I'm not warning you again because I'm going to have a spoiler for you here in about 10 seconds. Peacemaker, to me, is easily the most unlikable character from the Suicide Squad. Pete Davidson's Blackguard is obviously a douche and a traitor, but he is the first of the decoy team to die minutes into the movie, so he doesn't have much time to grate on your nerves. See, I told you there'd be spoilers, but you didn't believe me. Peacemaker is consistently annoying throughout the movie, so I really didn't have high expectations for the show. When it was first announced, I wasn't even 100% sure I was going to watch it. Well, obviously I did, or else I wouldn't be doing the podcast about it. I could understand his inclusion in a team movie, but not carrying a solo television series. I mean, this is not an A-list or even a B-list character. Hell, Peacemaker wasn't even originally owned by DC Comics. Peacemaker was actually acquired along with a handful of other heroes from Charlton Comics, and they have a very interesting side note to one of the most celebrated stories in comic book history. Charlton Comics is most notable for the Steve Ditko created or co-created Blue Beetle, specifically Ted Kord, The Question, Captain Atom, and Nightshade. DC bought the rights to those and a few other characters when Charlton went out of business. Originally, Alan Moore wanted to use these characters for a miniseries that deconstructed superhero tropes, but after pushback from his editor, instead created analogs of the Charlton heroes. These became the main characters of Watchmen. Thunderbolt became Ozymandias, although some have speculated another Charlton character, Judo Master, who appeared in the Peacemaker show, may have had some aspects incorporated as well. Question became Rorschach, Blue Beetle became Night Owl, Nightshade, Minor Sir Superpowers, became Silk Spectre, Captain Atom became Dr. Manhattan, and Peacemaker became the Comedian. If Moore had gotten his way, can you imagine Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Peacemaker in Zack Snyder's Watchmen movie? Originally, Peacemaker preferred non-lethal means of subduing the bad guys. It wasn't until his reemergence after Crisis on Infinite Earths, combined with the extreme era of the 90s, that gave us the kill anyone to achieve peace idea. I'm sure Watchmen had a lot to do with it as well. The same way Question went from the stoic objectivist reporter crusading for the truth to the Rorschach-esque crazy conspiracy theorist in Justice League Unlimited, Peacemaker in the comics became more of a sociopath who really didn't care who he killed, similar to the Comedian. Unfortunately, the extreme caricature Peacemaker has become is where the Suicide Squad movie and the Peacemaker TV series take most of their concepts. However, there is a character in the television show who has had an even more drastic change. Vigilante is vastly different from the comic book than he is in the television show. Really, the only thing that remains are the name and the costume. Adrian Chase is a tragic character. He debuted in the New Teen Titans as a district attorney trying to put away the bad guys. In classic comic book trope, when a mob boss has Adrian's family killed, he learns fighting techniques and weaponry, dons a costume, and exacts revenge, using only non-lethal force in the beginning. He then goes on to target other bad guys who escape justice in his own solo series. His mind slowly deteriorates, and he loses his moral compass. It doesn't help that along the way, Peacemaker kills one of his best friends. Yeah, Vigilante and Peacemaker hate each other in the comics. He begins to take out anyone in his way, even innocents, until he realizes what he has become and breaks down. Now, I don't know if this has ever happened in any other solo series, but Vigilante's last issue ends with him committing suicide. I've read articles saying this latest version of Vigilante is better, while others like the serious original. If you have a preference, that's cool. I'm not going to think more or less of you either way. I prefer the serious original version because that's the one that got burned into my teenage mind and is a poignant take on how a person can lose their way. Let me put it to you another way. There are two movies, Doctor Strangelove and Failsafe. They're basically the same movie with the same plot, but Doctor Strangelove is a comedy satire, and Failsafe is a gut-wrenching drama. Both are amazing, and you can make a strong case for either as the better movie, just like you can with the different versions of Vigilante. As for the Peacemaker show itself, I'm going to go with my traditional route and go over the things I disliked first. I felt that there was a lot of hype for the season finale, that they would take the story to another level. But it just didn't happen for me. There wasn't that extra boost to the final episode that put it above everything else from the rest of the series. Throughout the first season, each episode has had some crazy shit happen. The battle with the butterfly-controlled woman in the first episode that ends with pieces of her splattered all over the parking lot is one hell of a way to pull people in. Taking out a butterfly-controlled gorilla with a chainsaw? Probably the biggest holy shit moment in the entire series. And just think about that last sentence. Taking out a butterfly-controlled gorilla with a chainsaw. After that, giant alien food source for the butterfly bad guys just didn't have an impact. Maybe it's because the butterflies talked about having their cow a couple of episodes prior, so I was already expecting something like that. Maybe because this alien cow was immobile, hanging in the cave getting milked, and wouldn't or couldn't even put up a fight. It could only hang there and wait to be killed. I can't even tell if it was aware of what was happening to it. Plus, it has these big black eyes and a single tooth that made it reminiscent of an old-time cartoon baby. It was almost cute. And it kind of sucks that it had to die. It kind of reminded me of the end of Wonder Woman, where Ares still looks like Sir Patrick under his armor. So it looks like Diana's just beating up an old man. The cow's actual death was pretty easy. The real difficulty was going through the army of butterflies to get to it. And after that, it was anticlimactic. I think the defeat of White Dragon in the previous episode had a much stronger emotional hit than Adebayo torpedoing into a giant defenseless alien. Another problem I had with the final episode is Amanda Waller's reaction to Adebayo publicly outing her and Task Force X. Don't get me wrong, I fucking love Viola Davis, and I think she has been perfect as Waller in both movies. However, there is no fucking way Amanda Waller would be just sitting on her couch watching that press conference. As soon as Adebayo walked up to the podium, Waller would be on the phone getting people to burn any proof she's connected and probably putting a hit out on her own daughter for the betrayal. Once again, James Gunn gives us an alien threat that at the last minute makes a half-assed statement that clumsily attempts to garner sympathy for their actions. Oh, they're doing it for our own good? They have to save us from ourselves? All they have to do is murder us and take over our bodies? Why do they even fucking care? They even admit their only food source will only feed them for 100 years, and then they all die. Hell, at least Starro just wanted to go back to floating in space. More on this in the end. This is not so much something I disliked, but something I questioned. Why does Judo Master's costume look so much like TDK's from the movie? When the trailer for the series first dropped, I thought that was TDK for a moment. For the most part, I really liked the show. I think I would have given the show a 9 out of 10 for episodes 1 through 7, but I drop it to 8 after the finale for the reasons I just mentioned. So let me get on with the things that I really liked about the show. First off, the thing pretty much everyone except my wife loves, the opening credits. Now, remember, I was not entirely invested in this show. When it dropped, I had some time, so I figured I'd give it a look. The opening of the first episode shows Peacemaker getting out of the hospital and expecting Waller to take him back to Belle Reve. But suddenly, the opening to Wigwam's song begins. And the opening credits begin, with Peacemaker dancing and quickly joined by Vigilante and Adebayo. My eyes widened as other members of the cast join in, and I really did say out loud, "What the fuck?" I mean, I was wondering what the hell I'd gotten myself into. It was so strange, and it just kept going. It wasn't until the orderly from the hospital danced across the screen with his mop that I cracked a smile, but I still wasn't sold on it. They finally had me in the closing seconds of the credits with two absolutely awesome things. First, Judo Master climbs out of the hole in the floor and creeps over to Peacemaker, who lifts him up on his shoulder. I liked that. However, I loved it when Eagly not only swoops in and lands in front of everyone with his wings spread out to end the dance number, but as everyone stands there breathing heavily from the routine, Eagly looks down and shuffles his feet like he's just slightly off his mark, then looks back at the camera. At that second, they had me. I didn't skip the credits for any of the episodes when they dropped. Of course, this is all set to the song "Do You Really Want to Taste It" by Wigwam. I'd never heard that song before, and yeah, I downloaded it. It's in my road trip playlist. It's pretty damn catchy. The whole show was riddled with songs perfect for the situation and characters. I am by no means a music aficionado, so I didn't recognize a lot of the songs. Some bands I'd heard of, but wasn't immediately familiar with their music. But that's what's great about these kinds of things. I've picked up a lot of really great music. The improvised lines were also pretty great. At least, I assume they were improvised. Especially when Peacemaker lists off all the people and fictional characters Economos could have used instead of Peacemaker's father. I definitely advise checking out the extended scene at the end of the episode where the list of names includes James Gunn. I also love the names he gives to the kids at the school career day. I think gender-swapped Alfred E. Newman is my favorite. Peacemaker's journey in general is pretty well done. I do like that he repeatedly breaks down over the death of Rick Flagg and that the memory haunts him almost as much as the accidental death of his brother. Showing that he doesn't like what he's become is what was missing from the Peacemaker in the Suicide Squad. As the first season goes on, he says fewer buffoonish things while Vigilante seems to get more obliviously idiotic. My favorite actors in the series were Jennifer Holland and Chakwudi Avuji. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Everyone else got to cut up and be weird and funny, but these two had to be the Abbott to everybody else's Costello. I love the name drops in the series. Batmite was the first name to really grab people's attention, and I love that he's now canon, especially after the surprise cameo in the finale that I'll get to in a few moments. Batmite is not one of my favorite characters. I think an imp pestering a superhero works better with Mr. McCess Pidlick harassing Superman. Although, I do like Grant Morrison's take that Batmite is just a manifestation of Batman's consciousness that is triggered whenever Batman has his mind wiped or is driven insane. Matter Eater Lad is interesting because in the comics, like TDK, he's from 1,000 years in the future. Matter Eater Lad is an alien from the planet Bismol and a member of the Legion of Superheroes. Comic book artist Mike Grell once called them the Legion of Stupid Heroes. Given Matter Eater Lad's skill set, that's understandable. TDK was rejected by the team. I don't think he even made it into the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Yes, that's a thing, and they are hilarious. Dollman is mentioned, another character who originated from another comic book company, Quality Comics. More than 2 decades before the Silver Age Atom or Ant-Man, Dollman was the first shrinking superhero, created by Will Eisner. There are also some clever and obscure Easter eggs. Charlie the Gorilla. Holy shit, you want to talk about obscure. Even I had to look this one up. Charlie the Gorilla comes from a single-issue Weird War story from a 1966 comic about a gorilla with above-average intelligence on a USO tour that through a series of crazy events helps a group of Marines capture an island in World War II. That's obscure. In episode 6, there's a flyer for what appears to be a privateer movie, which may or may not be a porno because it's subtitled The Admiral's Seaman. The privateer is one of many aliases used by Mark Shaw, who was also part of the Suicide Squad in the comics for a time under the name Manhunter. Shaw is another public defender who donned a costume to go after the bad guys who escaped punishment, much like Adrian Chase in the comics. But Shaw pretty much always ends up allying with or turning into a bad guy. And finally, at least for the Easter eggs I can remember, a man named Alan Kupperberg is mentioned in one of the episodes. Now, this is a reference to a writer and artist from Marvel and DC who passed away a few years ago. I looked it up, and I didn't see anything about him working on Peacemaker or any of the other characters in the series. It's actually his brother, Paul Kupperberg, who wrote solo books for both Peacemaker and Vigilante, including the final issue of Vigilante that I mentioned earlier. I don't know if they accidentally got the name wrong or what. Throughout the series, Peacemaker routinely makes outlandish accusations about members of the Justice League, including repeatedly saying that Aquaman fucks fish. In the finale, the Justice League appears and Peacemaker tells Aquaman to go fuck another fish, asshole. Flash then teases Aquaman about it too. Despite what some online commenters have said since the finale, this does not undo all the cool things that have been built up regarding Aquaman. Jokes about Aquaman have been going on for years, decades. It was even incorporated into Geoff Johns' run on the character about 10 years ago. It's become part of the character that he rises above it. Despite what online commenters have said, the scene most certainly does not take away from the tone of the Snyderverse. I've been trying to tell anyone who will listen that you can have radically different tones from one project to another. The point I made on Twitter a while back was in the late 80s, you could pick up the Batman comic book during a very serious run about how he dealt with Jason Todd's brutal murder at the hands of the Joker. Then read Keith Giffen's hilarious Justice League International, where Batman routinely had to put up with the hijinks of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, as well as dysfunctional team members. Same Batman, vastly different takes. You can have serious movies like Zack Snyder's Justice League and still have the same universe and the same characters appear in a different movie or television show with lighter tones, jokes, and fun. Hell, if anything, this enhances the Snyderverse because it shows that the team has grown and bonded, because last we saw the two together, Flash was intimidated by Aquaman. Now he's comfortable teasing him. Movie and TV show executives used to be afraid to put the X-Men into comic-accurate costumes, have alternative universe characters interacting with each other, risk movie budgets on little-known characters like Black Adam or Guardians of the Galaxy. But their fears have proven to be misguided. The audiences can handle it. The audiences can handle changing tones in a shared cinematic universe. The DCEU can become a true cinematic comic book universe where different directors can use the same actors in a variety of styles. Just do me a favor, Warner Brothers, and have it a priority to make an Adam movie with Edgar Wright as the director. By the way, Aquaman says, "Fuck you, Barry," when Flash goes along with the fish-fucking joke. Do you think social media is going to clutch their pearls in the same way they did when Batman said, "I will fucking kill you," to the Joker in Zack Snyder's Justice League? As you may have heard, there is a second series planned to spin out from the Suicide Squad. They have not yet announced what character or characters this second spinoff will focus on. But here's my crazy prediction that is obviously wish fulfillment. Rick Flagg. Hear me out. Recently, in the comics, it is discovered Amanda Waller's people have the ability to revive dead characters under certain conditions. What if they take this concept and apply it to Rick Flagg? Here's the kicker. They could make the entire season look like a flashback, and at the end, reveal that he's been brought back from the dead, and it's all taken place after the events of the Suicide Squad. Of course, if you want really crazy, you can make the next series about TDK, since I was right, and he did survive. Okay, at this point, I'm going to jump into some political commentary about Peacemaker. I don't blame you if you don't want to hear that, so if you want to jump out now, I understand. There was one glaring line that stood out for me in the finale. Now, look, I get it. The people who make this show in general, and James Gunn in specific, have a very obvious and thinly veiled political agenda, but blatant ignorance needs to be called out. Adebayo describes Peacemaker as a proto-fascist libertarian. This is an oxymoron. If you study fascism, one of the main tenets is the use of violence to force your ideas on others. If someone disagrees with a fascist, the fascist beats the crap out of them until they capitulate. You can be a fascist conservative. Conservatives definitely believe the war on terror will bring American ideals to the Middle East. You can be a fascist liberal. Liberals absolutely support rioting, looting, and the destruction of property to make people capitulate to liberal ideology. One of the main tenets of libertarianism is you cannot initiate force. You may only use force once someone else initiates it against you in order to defend yourself. You cannot be a fascist and a libertarian. Hard stop. No exceptions. I get that James Gunn and left-wingers like him don't like that more people are waking to the libertarian philosophy, so he feels he needs to misrepresent it when the opportunity arises. I know the ideas of libertarianism are a threat to the socialists and communists and leftist fascists, as well as the corporatist, federalists, and right-wing fundamentalists, because libertarianism focuses on individual liberty over majority vote, ownership of one's body, and the aforementioned non-initiation of violence. That goes against the actions supported by both liberals and conservatives that have taken place in America and other Western countries over the past couple of years. Government force mandates, lockdowns, arrest and detention of the unvaccinated, police action against peaceful protesters, etc. Some of these people are so desperate to justify their point of view, they feebly try to force it into their fictional stories. The butterflies were the fascists. They were the ones literally killing people, taking over their bodies, and working to force their morality on the world. Seems to me the message James Gunn was trying to convey was the butterflies' cause was justified. See, it's bad for a white dragon to use violence to promote his morality, for obvious reasons. It's bad for Peacemaker and his team to use violence because they're a bunch of private citizens and rogue government agents using guns. However, it's perfectly fine for the butterflies to fly into people's mouths, murder them, and then use their bodies to slowly take over the world because they're smart. They have all the answers, and they couldn't possibly be wrong about their conclusions. Therefore, it's okay to use the same tactics you vilify Peacemaker for and kill anyone who stands in your way, man, woman, or child. Don't forget, Senator Goff was taken over by the butterflies. So were his wife, daughter, and son. Yeah, Vigilante shot them, but they were already dead. It was the butterflies in control. I wouldn't be surprised if, in this fictional story, the butterflies celebrated their murder slash takeover of these people's bodies in much the same way certain liberals on Twitter celebrate the COVID death of any unvaccinated person, or certain conservatives mock the COVID death of a vaccinated person. And yes, I know I'm taking the COVID route, even though the message of the butterflies is really an obvious environmentalism rant. How dare humanity ignore the science? Unless, of course, it is the legitimate climate scientists who question the conclusion of their government-funded colleagues or offer alternative theories. Then you can ignore it. How dare humanity favor populist politicians who deny the claims? You know who's a populist politician? Barack Obama. The guy who takes private jets halfway across the world to attend environmental summits. You know who else is a populist politician? Al Gore. The guy who only put up solar panels on his property after it was reported that he was the biggest energy user in the state of Tennessee. Their actions deny the claims. There was an alternate ending where Peacemaker actually allied with the butterflies. Given James Gunn's history, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the direction they really wanted to go. I will give James Gunn kudos for another message, though. Vigilante's Southern Rock rant at the end of episode 4, I believe. is a beautifully disguised lesson that people need to get their heads out of their asses. Some of the things you love are created by people you think you're supposed to hate. Why do you hate them? Because your mommy and daddy hated them? Because the asshole you voted for hates them? Because your preferred media propaganda hates them? Because the radicalized speaker who enthralled everyone at the indoctrination meeting hates them? Why are you listening to hate? Why are you letting their bigotry cloud your judgment? That's the problem with bigotry of any kind, isn't it? You just glom on to one way of thinking and end up letting it control your life, never accepting that someone else may have another way of doing things that is different from the way you believe. You can't just get your head out of your ass and let it go. No, you gotta force your morality on everybody else. You have to cram your inaccurate message into your television show. You have to obliviously post hypocritical shit on social media. You have to support politicians and causes that do the very thing you claim to be against. Maybe it's time to take a page from Peacemaker's story arc and do better. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.